You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's my favourite time of the week because it's Monday afternoon, and it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin in Johannesburg. David, I want to go through the SENS announcements that have come out today. You can either say yes or no to the companies that have come up with results today. But let's start with the Steinhoff news, which broke at around half past five on Friday afternoon, a forensic investigation into what we knew had happened but didn't quite know the extent of it. And also, I don't think we still don't really know how they did it, but it's an awful lot of money.
You know what? We're trying to piece things together. And it's very difficult without going through the report. But there are going to be a lot of lessons that we're going to learn from it. Lindsay, the one lesson, and I'll start up with that, you know, where you start to see restructuring all the time, you know, movement of the assets, new companies being formed, old companies, you know, assets being shifted between companies. That's got to be a red flag. You know, it does happen all the time, or where you start to see assets being inflated, such as intangibles and that, another red flag. What I'm trying to get together, and I've been trying to do this for a long time, is that obviously they've told us that the fictitious companies have been created, or relationships with independent parties that were actually in some way not that independent. And they created fictitious revenue. And of course, where you create fictitious revenue, you've got a receivable or a debt against that. You know, there's another side to the deal. You can't just put through revenue, which is on one side, without putting, so income on the one side would be a credit. You've got to put, well, somebody owes me for that. You know, if I've sold something, they owe me for it. How did they handle those receivables and that's, or the accounts receivable, which wouldn't be recoverable because they're fictitious entries? And of course, along the way, they had to convert those into all kinds of assets, you know, by shifting things around within the group. So we're going to uncover this, obviously, with PwC. But I would imagine that there would have been a lot of intercompany loans that would have inflated money flowing between various companies in an effort to hide it. So it must be a monumental effort that was put into this to actually try and establish what these chaps did, but how they could keep it up for so long and how they could go to sleep at night. Certainly Marcus, and put his head on a pillow and get in front of the radio, even talk to you, whoever he was talking to, with a clear conscience, just baffles me. You know, you've got to be a certain character. You have to be a, I don't know whether they call them psychopaths, sociopaths.
Sociopath is what Alec Hogg always would describe him as. I mean, I think Alec knew him quite well through horse racing circles, as well as their business dealings they had through broadcasting. But he always called him a sociopath. I'm not sure what that is, but it's certainly not a sociophobe, which I am. But a sociopath is someone who I think doesn't really care about the rest of society and blames everybody else. I think that's what it is.
You know, that's where when Madoff, you know, when Madoff could sit in front of a mother with her young daughter or a grandmother with a young girl and take their funds knowing that they were never going to get it back, or knowing that he was cheating them, you have to be some kind of character to go to those levels, you know, down to those levels where a little young girl sits in front of you, or a young couple, and you take their money knowing that you're going to cause them immense damage or harm along the way. And I think that to an extent that was Marcus. You know, they were never going to unravel this. How would they ever unravel this? They were so deep. So I mean, for years we're going to, there are a lot of lessons that we're going to learn. And I think the one thing about it is that when you start to see intercompany loans and restructuring and all those kind of things, just let that be a red flag. Just move away. You know, if you don't understand it, don't try and get on top of it. Just move on to something else.
A sociopath is a term used to describe someone who has antisocial personality disorder, ASPD. People with ASPD can't understand others' feelings. They'll often break rules or make impulsive decisions without feeling guilty for the harm they cause. Yeah. That about sums it up, I think.
It does. Yeah, that is. That's a very good description of what this was, and certainly the Madoff situation, where knowingly, you know, it's like borrowing money from someone who's close family friend and knowing that you're never going to repay them. I know, besides being fraud, you know, you've got to be that kind of character that doesn't care.
Okay, sure. Let's go through the Stock Exchange new service announcements via the sharenet.co.za website, and we'll go as they came out, David. Grand Parade Investments Limited. Yeah, their donut business has gone dunking, hasn't it? I mean, that's gone bang.
It has. Yeah.
But revenue was up 28%, and this is for the 6 months ended December. Group central costs down 39%, gross profit up 26%, EBITDA up 11%. It's all bean counting stuff, but essentially they've had a tough time. They've opened a few more Burger Kings. They're concentrating on Burger King. They're getting rid of Baskin Robbins and Dunkin' Donuts, and well done. We don't need that rubbish here.
No. the one thing I've learned, Linz, is that where a company doesn't interest me or where it's gone through these kind of changes, I just move on. You know, it's not worth going through the accounts. And I don't mean it in a dismissive way in that, because you tend to know which are good companies, which are bad. And, you know, you look into them for clues, but this one's been all over the place. And at one stage, I liked Hassim Adam. It was Hassim Adam.
Yes,
I can't remember his name.
Yes.
Yeah, and subsequently, I've just moved on. I don't know. It's just too much to try and understand here. You know, at the end of the day, headline earnings from continuing operations, these are more accounting funnies, 1.28 cents, which is hardly anything.
So you wouldn't look at this thing until it reestablishes itself in your mind anyway?
No, not at all. not one that I pay too much attention to.
Okay, in that case, we shall move on to the next one. You might not pay too much attention to this one, but I used to enjoy speaking to Carsten Wellner, the CEO of Ascendis.
Yes,
Ascendis Health came out with its interim results to the end of December. It fell out of favor, and it always seemed to me that it wasn't like a mini Aspen, but it kept on looking for overseas diversification and kept on buying stuff. That's my crude assessment.
And again, you know what happens is if you sum up these businesses, those that were very aggressive on acquisition, eventually they have difficulty consolidating those or absorbing them, and things go wrong. It's very, it's if you want to grow organically and have bolt-on acquisitions and that. But where you just try to take over the world, things do go wrong. Again, it's another one that has fallen from grace and is trying to pick up from where it is. But it's not once they go off the rails, I also move on. Let's see what other. And it's a pity because, Lindsay, you've got to keep looking for smaller businesses because we always look for those smaller businesses that will become bigger businesses. Investec was once upon a time a very small business. Bidvest was a small business. And so, dare I say, Aspen was a small business. But a lot of these were at one stage small or medium caps and managed to grow into some very substantial businesses. So we're always looking for what's going to be the next big thing. But unfortunately, so many just fall by the wayside. And I think Ascendis is one of them.
Okay, so we don't look at that
Grand
one
Parade.
Either. Yeah. Next one is Sun International. I've already spoken to Anthony Leeming, the CEO, and you can get that as a podcast. I spoke to him at 11 o'clock this morning. This is for the year ended December the 31st. What they're doing is they're paying down the debt, and they're not going into their shells, and they haven't been in their shells ever since the South African consumer came under pressure and therefore impacted their business. Latin America in the second half of the year doing a little bit better. But it's a discretionary spend company, and when people don't have any money, it's like insurance. You don't spend on this sort of thing, I don't think.
No, well, obviously all their focus is now going to Latin America, spending a lot of time there. That's where some of the growth was, and they've consolidated that into their numbers. So I think it's flattered their numbers to an extent. But as you say, they are pushing down debt. But again, they put a lot of money into Times Square, which is slowly starting to contribute. But Lindsay, when you read what they say about the business and then you look at the results, there's a bit of a disconnect. You know, things are still incredibly tough. But credit to new management. They're trying, but I think they've got the economy against them. So I see the share prices hardly responded. What did respond today, which may be connected, I'm not sure, is Togo Sun. Was up about 3.5%. I don't know whether there was something in the results that actually pointed towards a recovery in Togo or whether people are switching from Sun International to Togo. But
yes, aren't they unbundling their hotel divisions, Soko Sun?
What it is? Yeah,
I think they. Well, it's been around for a while, but maybe it's something to do with
that's
people realizing
to hospitality. Yeah,
exactly.
But, But, you know, Lindsay, when you drill it down, it's exactly as if the local economy, very, very tough. It's we always thought that casinos would be bulletproof and people would still go there and spend, but not so. I don't think they've got the money to even gamble it away or waste it away.
Advertech, let's see if we can tweak your interest here. Revenue up 11% for the year ended 31st of December. Operating profit 14% better. Mm. Normalized earnings per share at 8%. A dividend per share of 30 cents was declared. Advertech, do you own it? Have you ever owned it?
No,
would
I
you
don't.
Consider
I don't,
owning
but
it?
I like it. Funny enough, I like it better than I do Cura simply because of the valuation basis. And you can see these are decent results. I think what's happening in that area is it's becoming more and more difficult to actually grow the businesses as people find it difficult to pay, you know, to pay private school fees. And also you're getting, you know, quite a bit of immigration. And that's beginning to hurt the schooling groups. But I think this is a pretty decent result. I think if you want to get into this area, they've been around a long time. People will spend on education. Companies also, you know, they also tapped into the company market, which, you know, for further education. But listen, it's a number. They might be. I'm just looking at the multiple, which in my views, I thought they were much lower than this. This is about an 18 or 19 multiple. I think that's pretty high.
That's rich.
I would have thought that. I thought they were less than that. Because Curo's, you know, Curo's still at about 40, 45 or something like this. Maybe that's why, you know, there has been a switch into Advertech. But I think at a lower level, I would certainly consider it. But decent business.
Hulamin came out with a revised trading statement. The opening salvo this morning saw the share price down about 6%. But this is one of those industries that used to be, probably when you were on the floor at Diagonal Street, this used to be a feature of your day or your week at least, but not anymore.
No. I've never known what's gone wrong with this. In fact, the whole Tongaat group is a bit of a puzzle to me because Tongaat was in those early days when we were on the floor back in the 80s and 90s was a stalwart business of the South African economy. And within it, it had Hulamin, which was a huge business. Hulamin, it had the sugar interests. The property interests weren't considered at that stage because they were mainly on the sugar side and also, of course, on the starch side and other things. But you know, to see where it is today is just perhaps testimony of what's happening in commodity companies and also the country. But they're not even a small cap anymore, Hulamin. This used to be a huge cap when it first unbundled from Tongaat. I think this was a 40 Rand share or thereabouts. My memory goes back, but, you know, I think huge problems along the way. You know, maybe to do with procurement and also with their markets because they procure, you know, they have to buy, it's not a natural resource. They have to buy the bauxite or aluminium, convert it or, you know, or from a producer who has to import it. And then whatever they make, they also sell it at export prices. So today the market cap, $1.5 billion, which
good
is
Lord.
You know, a fraction. One tenth of where it used to be.
So if you take Hulamin and Tongaat together, they're about $3.5 billion in total.
And that's nothing, Lindsay. That's absolutely nothing. And it just shows you how far they have. I always remember driving in, you know, whenever we were down in the Natal coast and used to drive past. I mean, because the Tongaat family, the Hulett family, should I say, were a hugely, you know, very affluent family, very influential family. Certainly used to make the social pages, etc. And I think they're still influential down that area. And I always remember passing the Tongaat. You know, it was always a highlight to go and visit the Tongaat estate.
Yes.
They had these beautiful offices with Gwela Goodman paintings all over the place. And see where they are today. It's crazy. Mm. Anyway.
Okay, so let's summarize here. You don't like Grand Parade. You don't like Sun International. No. You don't like Ascendis. You don't like Hulamin. How about Bell Equipment? Bell Equipment. Let's have a look at that one. Provisional audited results for the year ended December. Do you like this type of equipment? Probably
well,
not.
Probably not because there's no spend. You know, there's absolutely no spend. So, I mean, it's very difficult for companies like this to operate. I know they have, they do operate internationally and they're well respected, but very, very difficult area of the market to get involved with, unless, of course, you're in mining. But not an exceptional result.
Revenue up 10%, headline earnings per share up 3%, final dividend unchanged at 25 cents. But at least they've spent something on you. We are pleased to report that during the year under review, the group has maintained the positive momentum sparked in 2017 by delivering another set of solid results, despite a significant currency devaluation loss in Zimbabwe. When I read things like that, I don't know about you, but I don't get depressed, but I feel a little bit down.
Yeah, of course you do. Well, you know, I think we've been so battered by results. And these are the end results. In other words, we've gone through almost 2 months of results, or 6 weeks at least. And there's been very little to crow about or to get excited about. There are one or two companies that have done reasonably well, but by and large, it's been a very, very tough time. And even where companies have done well, such as a super group, it's been on one cylinder here and there. Transaction capital stands out a little bit, doing a well-run business. So very odd, but at the top end of the market, extremely difficult, ignoring some of the miners where there has been a turnaround. But the banks have given us nothing to get excited about. The insurance companies also just bemoaning the tough times here. And so it goes, retailers all under pressure. And we've seen it in performance. At the moment, I'm looking, as I talk to you, the market up about 1.4%, which is an exceptional run today.
It really is.
Lindsay, it's been driven, when you analyze it, it's actually been driven by the UK, by our foreign listed stuff. So it's because of the weightings in the market, if you look at what's really driving it up, it's been British American Tobacco, it's been Tencent, it's been BHP, Glencore, Anglos, AB InBev is up quite nicely. These are all up in the UK, and of course, on translation, it's lifted our market. Of course, there's been a follow through to some of our stocks as well, but this is really lifted by offshore markets. Very little to do with the local economy.
Yes, we've got the All Share Top 40 Futures for June delivery, which is what is it now? It's March, so we've got the futures close out on Wednesday. The June month, up 2.3%, up 1,157 points as we pre-record this interview. Some big volume going through the market as well. It's a public holiday on Thursday. Maybe people are lumping all their trades into Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and going away for a long weekend. That would be the sensible thing to do. David, just back to Steinhoff before we talk about football. It rallied up to, I think, R2.09 or R2.10 this morning. Now that this report is out, do you think people are starting to understand it a little bit more and therefore are able to understand and value what is left of the business, and there may be an opportunity here? Or again, do you just say, not a chance will I touch this thing?
Not a chance will I touch it. If I look in the UK in Europe at the moment, remember this is a 12 euro cents. So if it goes down 1 cent, it loses 7 or 8%.
Yeah.
And of course, obviously what happens is people are translating the offshore price into against the euro, which is now 16.40, into our market. So I think we've been given a lift by maybe the weakness in the euro, but I wouldn't touch it. I think it's going to be very difficult to unravel. When we read the 300 pages, I think we'll get a closer look as to who the characters are, involved, and how they're ever going to, we don't know the value of these stocks, because already we're waiting for the report. So whatever PwC comes out might say that a lot of the valuations that we're even trading on presently are not really real, because you've got to undo so many deals along the way. That there are a lot of loans, a lot of assets might be grossly overstated, particularly intangibles or goodwill or things like that. So I would just run for the hills. I just say, look, I don't need this in my life. There's so many other things that are happening globally.
Nothing has been of any interest to David Shapiro today. So you're going to have to come up with something that's going to interest us. Give us an idea, please. Throw us something.
You know what's intriguing is that, American markets, I'm just looking at the U.S. market, we're about only 3% from the all-time high. I must admit that I knew that in December maybe markets had gone to a low, which was a bit overdone, but I didn't expect the kind of turnaround that we've seen. But I've been doing quite a bit of reading, trying to find new themes and that. And I still get intrigued by by the numbers. Let me give you a number then, which I picked up, which will give you something very, very positive to think about. I was looking at the Chinese, and this I picked up in The Economist. I was looking at the Chinese travel numbers. There's a $240 billion deficit, which means, in other words, Chinese people traveling out versus those that are coming into China.
Right.
So Chinese are traveling. They're spending $240 billion traveling outside of China. And every time, they are big spenders when they do travel. So what's I know that we had Prada's numbers out today, which were down on that. But I think what we haven't fully discounted is the growth in the Chinese middle class, which I think is going to keep going, and how these people will continue to spend, despite all our obsession with the slowing China. I think I'm not sure it's going to affect the middle class to that, you know, to that extent. So, you know, when they go, they love to buy LVMH and Gucci and all those kind of big brand names. I think this is something that's going to persist, and it still remains a very interesting or attractive area of the market to me.
And
I haven't even got onto the gaming side.
Well, no, but also at the micro level, I was watching a program over the weekend. I think it was on CNN, actually, and they were featuring the tourism aspect of the Cape Town economy. And they went to Groot Constantia Wine Estate, and there was a gentleman there who is not only well-versed in the estate's wines, but also fluent in Mandarin. And this is something, if South Africa can start to cater for the sort of surge in tourism that you've just spoken from that particular country, China, that is, then the sky is the limit, because they really want to be made to feel at home. I know that from seeing these tour groups.
Well, absolutely. I know we see plenty of Chinese tourists in South Africa and that, but the more we can attract them, of course, it's going to be to our benefit. It's funny, when in the same article, they tend to go to Manila, they tend to go to Seoul and that. And when they looked at their hotel bookings, biggest attraction, Liverpool, which beat Venice and Barcelona.
Okay.
Liverpool, I'm not sure why, but anyway, that did come up. This is on the Ctrip, you know, Ctrip, which is the online booking. A lot of the stats were taken from Ctrip, which is the online booking agency. Booking.com has got a share in that as well. So you pick up. So I'm saying, for me, that remains, you know, one of the positives that certainly from the reading that I did over the weekend.
David, you mentioned Barcelona just now, and we always end our chats with football. There was no English Premiership this weekend to speak of, and I want you to broaden your horizons a little bit. And after I've put the phone down to you, I'm going to send you a clip of the highlights of a match between a team in Spain called Real Betis and FC Barcelona, where Lionel Messi scored his 33rd career hat-trick in La Liga, 51st in his career in all competitions. And the third goal was probably one of the best, it's probably goal of the season. And I've never seen this before. The home crowd, i.e. the Real Betis crowd, bowed down to him and sang his name to a man. The whole stadium did. And he was obviously taken aback by this. His colleagues had their head in their hands because the goal was so superb.
I can't wait.
Good luck, Manchester United, in the Champions League. That's all I can say.
Well, if you were to watch Manchester United, you'd feel really distressed for them, because I think they all went missing in action after. And poor old Solskjaer, you know, I think he's finally realized perhaps what poor old, you know, what Mourinho faced, because I don't know where they were. You know, after losing to Arsenal, one would have thought that they would have picked up their game, but unfortunately not.
And
Chelsea were even worse.
I turned off
the Chelsea game because I thought they were going to donner Everton about 6-0. I thought, not worth watching. And also, I don't know, we're missing in action as well. So from an Arsenal supporter, for me, that's great. But I think the only reason Arsenal are going up the ladder is because the other teams are just playing so poorly.
David, you won't be missing in action. You'll be back this time next week. That's David Shapiro from SASFIN, and that was Shapiro World. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za.